What's up, everybody? This is Francisco here for Sports Goose number 147. I'm joined by my good buddies, Andrew and Charles. Welcome, guys. Andrew, how's the day going? How's it hanging?
Between studying and kind of keeping track of all the happenings in college football, which I'll discuss in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. It was a pretty good day.
Yep. Charles, how about you?
I don't have words. If I am the Lord of Chaos, I would like to have known that assignment to me in life. Mm. But that's without going into detail of everything that's happened, even though I put in the chat a good portion of it. All I gotta say, though, is, you know, certain people, there's a buy one, get one free on some hands if you're coming around my block. I don't know if I can espouse that, but, you know, yeah. Attorneys are annoying. That's what I'll say.
Yeah.
Including myself. I am very annoying.
Yeah, we I had a run in myself today, so don't worry. But we're not going to talk about that, right? This is a kind of a more truncated version of the show because work got in my way. But you know, Andrew was studying, Charles was doing his thing too, so it kind of we're here now. We're here, so we're really just going to focus on two topics today, right? We got the wrestling at the end of the show, but there's baseball, but baseball's happening. Baseball happens. It goes on for on. Like, it's not really that important. Next week we'll start figuring out who the all-star teams are, and then we'll have some stuff to talk about. The NHL draft is happening on Thursday, and NHL free agency will open up, and NBA free agency and all that other stuff. So then we'll be able to open up. But this week we're just gonna, because as on the top right of the screen here, I have RCFB open, because our resident contributor and mod for there, Andrew. There's a lot of moving and shaking going on in the college football world.
Shucking and jiving.
Yeah.
Moving and juking.
Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make sense of it, because in the next few years, things are going to be really different, and the map.
2 seconds. Yeah. Like, this episode title is some actual baseball, and we're not even going to touch a bit of baseball.
You know, I thought we would talk about baseball, but then like 40,000 things happen where 40 teams are moving across the world and in college football, and I'm just like, and I thought about changing it, but I'm like, you know, it'd be pretty funny if we just called this some actual baseball.
It's the inside joke. If you watch the live stream, you actually see baseball in the background.
Yeah, that's true.
That's your encouragement to watch the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. There's various versions of this, but there is some actual baseball happening, but we're probably just not going to talk about it. And you want to watch some virtual stuff, it's in the back. But and behind Andrew, I've got the Marlins game on, because the Marlins are on fire right now. So, and Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, and the fraudulent Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California, USA are here. So, all right, Andrew, I'm going to put up the big screen here, unless you want to make this a whole Andrewverse thing. But
let's just do Andrewverse. Why not?
This is your wheelhouse. This is RCFB Andrew, which is really just Andrew.
So, wait, I got a question. Is that, if you've seen The Matrix, is it the second one's Revolution, right? No, Revelations?
No,
right?
The second one's Matrix Revolution.
Right? No, second one's Reloaded. You know, Reloaded, when Neo goes.
Oh, I thought that was the video game.
I don't remember.
Or no, that was Enter the Matrix. That was Enter the Matrix.
You remember when they see the architect? Well, this matters, because yes. If I'm misquoting the movie. So, you know, the architect, he just talks to Neo about everything, about the universe and structure matrix. This is Andrew with a white beard and white suit sitting down my ignorant ass, who knows probably a good 30% of college football, because the rest of it's rigged for the other 70%. Okay. So that's what I want people to imagine.
Right. So I've got the big old board here with RCFB open with football.
I'm still waiting for you to put Charles's quote on my screen somewhere.
I got to get to it. And I got to get to the other Andrew verses that I made out of Dal E Mini.
What is Terry? How he knows these things.
Okay, so.
Yes.
Let's do some work.
Is there, before we start, is there like an article or something that kind of like I can post up here that kind of sort of summarizes things, or is RCFB good enough?
If you just, really the only confirmed thing right now is that the only thing that's confirmed right now is the University of California at Los Angeles, so UCLA, mm-hmm. and University of Southern California, USC,
Okay.
are moving to the Big Ten Conference.
Yep.
From Pac-12.
I'll just
See,
go with
I
20.
helped. I helped. I contributed, guys.
And by the way, if you have questions anytime, please feel free to ask.
I do love the memes that came out when people found out those two California teams were going to be heading out to like the Midwest. Those were
Yeah,
funny.
that's yeah, the closest team to them is Nebraska.
Yeah, which is still not that close. It's like in
The Big Ten operates out of Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey and Maryland. So basically, for the most part, anything, more or less anything that's east of the Mississippi. They have a few outliers, like Nebraska, but that's it. That is the historic footprint of that conference. And as I was mentioning to Charles, and I did it, I said everything correctly. I did not make anything up, but I intentionally made it a little bit confusing because I just wanted to fuck with them. But the Big Ten is a team is a conference of 14 teams, and it has been that way since 2011.
You know what I said? This is Florida math, Florida education math, and I still couldn't get it.
Polk County.
Polk County.
Polk County, baby.
So let me give you a little bit of background about why this is so huge and monumental. And this comes actually almost a year exactly after Texas and Oklahoma kind of kicked off this latest round of realignment. There was a huge realignment back in the late 2000, late 2000s, early 2010s, where you had a lot of teams shifting conferences. That just messed everything up. But in comparison to that, in comparison to what's going on now, is like nothing. But I say nothing, but it set the stage for this. This doesn't happen without those earlier realignments in the 20 early 2010s. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the Pac-12 conference is either itself, going back to its predecessor, is a very old conference. It dates back to 1915. This is the conference that is historically tied with the Big Ten, ironically, in the Rose Bowl. The history of it was the winner, the conference champion of the Big Ten and the conference champion of the Pac-12 would meet in California in the granddaddy of them all, Rose Bowl. It is a really historic conference, one of the oldest. And again, I'm looping their predecessor, the Pacific Coast Conference, in. So USC has been a member of this conference in one way or another since 1922. And UCLA since 1928. And this conference now operates out of Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. And the teams in Utah and Colorado were relatively late adds. Those were only added in 2011. But historically, the conference is right on the West Coast. So the fact that these two, not only are they longtime members of the conference, but they bring in a shit ton of money because they are both Los Angeles schools. And that is losing those teams is like a stab to the gut. Those are two of their premier teams. UCLA is legendary in basketball. USC has a ton of history with football. So all of a sudden, the Pac-12 is losing all this to the Big Ten. So the Pac-12 ain't looking good. So in response to this, the Big 12 is taking a very long and hard look at the teams from the so-called Four Corner states. The Four Corners, by the way, are New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado, because all four of their states meet up at one point. It's called the Four Corners. They actually have a cool monument out there. But anyway, so in this case, that would be Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. The Big 12 is looking to add those schools because those four schools, they're probably sensing, the writing is on the wall for the Pac-12 conference. Because, it's losing those two teams all of a sudden makes that conference very unstable.
Can I ask a question here?
No, you can't, of course.
Okay. What's the benefit? Because I'm kind of confused as to, because I mean I think of it like historical rivalry, all Pacific teams, that kind of makes sense. What's the thinking for both USC and UCLA? They're kind of basically like the New York Giants and the Brooklyn Dodgers, like, hey, let's do this together. We hate each other, but let's make some money out there, you know? Why would they just decide to go all the way to all these Midwestern, NFC North type of schools?
Pac-12 sucks, that's why.
So you guys know that gif of
Did
Mr.
you just
or that
say
meme of Mr. Krabs where the reporter asked
GIF?
Money.
Wait. You said GIF?
Ooh, uh-oh.
I honestly say it both ways.
No, but you say it the first time.
It depends on how I'm feeling that day. If I don't think about it, I tend toward GIF, but I keep trying to train myself to say GIF, but
This
it's
is
a
why I
hard
think
habit to
God has
break.
abandoned this planet and we should all just waste and be rotten. Go on, continue.
So anyway, that the scene where the reporter asks why
Why'd you
Mr.
open this
Krabs,
to Krusty Krab too? It's from
and he says,
the
money.
movie.
That's your answer right there. If that's the answer to your question, the Big Ten and the SEC are kind of in a war of which is the better conference, which makes the most
It's
money.
almost like an arms race because what
Yeah,
SEC grabbed what?
it is. In
Texas and
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, right? So,
So yeah, it's really become an arms race. And even though technically the Power Five still exists,
Doesn't
and
ESPN also have the licensing rights to Big Ten on some of the streaming, if I'm not mistaken, on their ESPN Plus?
is the Big Ten Network an ESPN product?
Yes.
No, it's Fox.
Oh, well,
Am
actually
I
that's
thinking
but isn't
it's
that
actually
but isn't Disney also Fox
Oh,
Sports?
sorry. Big 12 is ESPN. Big 10 is Fox.
I think it's still all under Disney though, right? After they acquired it, because I think
Different.
Fox Sports kept, or Fox kept Fox Sports and FS1, so I'm guessing they probably also have
and
the
Fox
licensing
News,
rights.
but yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right, so never mind then. So the mouse doesn't have it yet.
Right.
For now.
So it really has become an arms race. Right now those two conferences are in a league of their own, pardon the pun. When it comes to how much money they get per year from TV deals, the Big 10 is in excess of 60 million per school per year. And the SEC is like a little less than 10 million behind, somewhere in the low to mid 50s. All the other conferences are making sub 40, like mid 30s at best. So those schools, they want more money. So even though the plan is, even though adding more schools dilutes their pot, ultimately they're choosing teams from big enough markets with big enough brands
But
that
when's the
will
last
end up.
time UCLA was actually viable? I think wasn't isn't Chip Kelly and
I
his aging
mean,
offense still
UCLA
there?
probably props up. I mean, like, maybe not on the
And I
football
forget
side,
sometimes it's
but
going to basketball, right?
this
As
is for
well.
like every sport, right? It's not just football.
Yeah.
Correct. This
Because
is
are
for
they
all
pulling in
sports. It's not
Notre
like this
Dame?
whole the whole deal with like, Notre Dame's like ACC, but not for football. But like, so this is all they're going all in. So like UCLA, I mean, like they've been
Pretty
pretty
good
good
at
in
basketball, yeah.
baseball and
Softball.
the coal job came from UCLA, as you know, Charles, right?
Damn right, yeah.
You know,
Oh,
and
no, the cold job came from me.
the hatred against Trevor Bauer also originated from there. So, and well, they were recently in the Final Four, right? So they're not. I think that kind of props the Big Ten up with regards to those schools. And USC
Like,
is trying to get back, right? They're a little U-ish in that sense.
say again.
They're a little U-ish in that sense where they think they're back, but they're not back.
He
Who,
didn't say
UCLA?
what you thought he saw.
Well,
Let's put it
first
again.
off, these moves are ultimately about football. I mean, obviously, they'll tell you the public line, the public quotes will be saying, oh, but they have such a rich history of championship success. But really, the only reason they're there is because football.
I like the quick and just this is just an aside. A quick people who are like, hockey fans who are floating the idea of maybe hockey schools, and it's like because Arizona State already kind of has their own.
I was talking to BU the other day about that. He, like myself, thinks the odds. So Arizona State. Let me give some background. Arizona State has a Division One ice hockey team. They're the only one on that side of the country. So I was saying, hey, Arizona State could the Big Ten school. Big Ten has its own Division One hockey conference. So I was like, hey, maybe USC UCLA can add hockey and then Arizona can join as a hockey only member like Notre Dame is. That would be amazing, but the odds of that happening are so slim. But anyway, so UCLA has won 119 NCAA team championships and USC has won 111. So they're blue bloods in every sense of the word when it comes to college athletics and college football. So that's why the Big Ten wanted them. It's they get good programs with a lot of notability, but then you get the Los Angeles market.
I guess so. Yeah.
But the thing is, the question then becomes, does the Big Ten want to expand one more time to add a couple of other schools? There are so many rumors going around and so many hypotheses and theories, it's hard to make out what anything is, what is real or not. Some of the things I've heard are Governor of Oregon, excuse me, will fight tooth and nail to make sure that Oregon State goes wherever Oregon goes. So there were people thinking that maybe the Big Ten would add Oregon and Washington. But then there's also the probability that the government of Washington wants to make sure that Washington State goes with Oregon. And then there are people that are thinking that the Big Ten will want to go after Notre Dame and then add one more team to make it to 20. It's just a total clusterfuck at this point of who's going where, what does everyone think everyone's going. But the only really kind of substantive thing that has come out is that the Big 12 is, like I mentioned, is trying to go after the four corner schools. If that happens, then the Big 12 is essentially done. Because that would leave them with eight teams and not per, well, right. So it would leave them with eight teams. And then there's also some thinking that the Oregon and Washington are going to go to the Big 12. If that's the case, that leaves the Big 12, the Pac-12 with six teams. And those are Washington State, Oregon State. Even I lose track. So let's say in the biggest possible scenario that the four corner schools plus Washington and Oregon leave. So that conference is left with Washington State, Oregon State, Cal, and Stanford. So they're down to four schools. At that point, that's unviable for a conference at that point.
Question. Cal the school that led to Aaron Rodgers being brought in? They deserve to fold.
Cal Berkeley. UC Berkeley, but everyone, at least sporting-wise, calls it Cal. That's another thing that really shocked people. That UCLA left without Cal because they're both part of the UC system. And technically, for all intents and purposes, at least academically, Berkeley is the flagship of the UC system.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always UC Berkeley and then like Stanford, but Stanford's a private school, right?
So, correct.
Yeah.
So even though UCLA is the more... stuff. So even though UCLA is more well-known because of their athletic prowess, ultimately the numero uno school in that system is UC Berkeley.
I just find it like the Pac-12, like you just think all the Pacific Coast, right? Like just a right. massive hole in Southern California where they wouldn't have a foothold. Like we would think, like... Where is San Diego State? What conference are they in?
They're in the Mountain West.
Mountain West. Like, do you think they'd lure, like, just to get something, you know, just start jacking it in San Diego?
Well, see, therein lies the potential. This is where you start getting into, I wonder who is going to go where, what's going to happen. So, the Pac-12 is going to work as hard as it possibly can to try and convince Oregon and Washington to stay. Because if those two schools leave, that's it. Even if the Four Corners schools stay, they're still taking a massive hit by losing Oregon, which is kind of their flagship school in terms of national notability. Plus Uncle Phil, as they call him, Phil Knight, and his oodles of money for being the founder of Nike. So they have a big purse wherever they go. So the Pac-12 really wants to keep them. They're kind of the last linchpin of what could save that conference. It's a lot of moving parts, because if those two leave, then the four corners will absolutely leave. If the four corners leaves, that increases the chance that Oregon and Washington will leave as well. And then the probability is that Oregon and Washington would leave for the Big 12, because then they have schools that are relatively close to them, as opposed to they would have if they went for the Big 10. their closest schools would be UCLA and USC, but then Nebraska. But if those six schools move together to the Big 12, then you have five, each school has five other schools within relatively low distance that you can play regularly against, and it really cuts down on your travel. So the thinking is the Pac-12, if they lose those schools, all six of them, then does it fold altogether, or do they try to reach some kind of an agreement with the Mountain West Conference where the two conferences combine? But that would take a lot of power away from them, because the Mountain West is a relatively weak conference. It's very top heavy, as it were. Well, no, it's not the Conference USA, which is incredibly weak. It's probably upper tier when it comes to the Group of Five conferences, but it's not the best either.
You would think it'd be like a, at least, I'm just thinking like travel wise, like, you know, they're still close and all that stuff. It'd be geographically, you know, good for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, but the competition they face is going to be a little bit lower. You've got
But at that point, it's kind of moot, because it's like
at that point, if the Pac-12 wants to survive, if they lose those six teams, that may be their only option at that point. And the interesting thing is, last year, when Oklahoma and Texas left the Big 12, everyone thought that the Big 12 was on life support, and it was going to take a miracle for them to survive and remain stable. They did, because everyone thought, oh, if those two teams leave, who knows, maybe the Big Ten will poach a school or two. You know, people were thinking, like, perhaps Kansas would be picked up by the Big Ten because it is part of the AAU, which is a group of very high academic schools. The Big Ten, as much as it is an athletics conference, all of their schools, with the exception of Nebraska, are part of the AAU. So they value academics just as much as their athletics. So people are thinking maybe they'll add Kansas, maybe they'll add Iowa State. None of that happened. But instead, the Big Ten waited and then got USC and UCLA, which is a much bigger move. So now the question becomes, is the Pac-12 going to suffer that proposed fate that the Big 12 was at last year, which is where other conferences are going to poach them? But now people are thinking that the Big 12 is going to go on the offense and try and poach the Pac-12. It's a mess. It's a very intriguing mess. It's fun to follow along with it. At the same time, though, I, along with diehard college football fans, hate it. Because, you know, the good old days, you know, the thing that we love about college football is those geographic regional rivalries. You know, just talking on the Pacific, in the Pac-12, you've got the Apple Cup, which is Oregon, Washington. Then you have Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, Washington State, Cal, Stanford, USC, UCLA.
Find it very, especially when you compare it to the pro sports, right? Because let's say the last few years, we've seen realignment in the NHL. The Astros moved to the American League. When the NFL got the 32 teams, they did the whole realignment thing. And they specifically realigned in a way that kind of took advantage of those rivalries, like the NHL realignment. Let's go with that. Like the Atlantic Division. The Atlantic Division is just designed because, like, four of the four of the six original six teams are in that division. You got Boston, right. Toronto, Montreal, Detroit. Detroit was put back in the Eastern Conference just to take advantage of that. And then, like, Ottawa. And then they put the two Florida teams because they figured, oh, we're just going to trap all the Snowbirds into those cities right there. And that's NHL's thinking there. And the Metropolitan was, like, geographically regional, okay? The New York teams, Philadelphia, Washington, Pittsburgh, they didn't want to break up those rivalries, even though you could look at the NHL and be like, oh, you could have done it a different way. And then, like, the Pacific Division, the Central Division, and even the NFL, the only real weird one is the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC East, and that's only because they didn't want to break up the rivalry they had with the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles and Washington. And so I just kind of find it funny that college football is just kind of like teams are willing to just drop, especially you were mentioning all these longtime rivalries. And it's like, oh, well, make more money. We'll make some new rivalries. That's kind of basically their thinking, right?
That's a big thing that everyone's joking about is like, ah, yes, the incredible rivalry of USC and fucking Nebraska. It's like, I know I keep making fun of Nebraska, but they are so easy to make fun of.
Just like Polk County.
Just like Polk.
Nebraska, the Polk County of the United States.
Nebraska, the Polk County of college football.
So
we get death threats from kids from Winter Haven. You don't say those things about us.
It's unfortunate because, I mean, you're absolutely right, Francisco, and I hadn't considered that pro sports retains a lot of its rivalries. The problem, though, is that there isn't really one overarching
body. Well, yeah. Body. Yeah, it's not like a league where it's like, okay, college football is, or college athletics, let's say, are more loosey-goosey about it.
Right.
There's no commissioner of college sports that's trying to keep it all together. And even though they're basically, like, all these conferences were just made to benefit those said schools, and by adding more, it benefits them in that sense. I just kind of find it funny that, like, in a given year, every college football team is not going to face the other college football teams, you know?
Right. But the thing is, as great as those sports rivalries are, or the pro rivalries are, they don't compare. They don't hold a flame for the most part. I mean, Yankees Red Sox is one thing, but on the whole, college football rivalries are significantly more intense than pro rivalries.
Yeah, it's because, you know, it's people were passionate about it. Many people peaked in college, so that's why they hang on to that too. So that's also a thing. And many people who never actually went to college can kind of sort of pretend that they went to college by cheering for those teams. Right. Like in Polk County, you know, all those Polk County people, they like the Gators, and so. You know,
I mean, case in point, I didn't go to UM, but, you know, my indoctrination in college football was because of the fact that I lived in Miami a little bit ahead of time. So you can get people who don't even go to the school that applied, and they're like, nah, we don't want you.
Yeah, like 90% of Miami hasn't even set foot on the campus.
To be fair, I did get a conditional offer from UM, but I was like, nah, I ain't got time for this stuff. You're either
in it or out. I got time for that $60,000 tuition.
Still broke even going to a public university.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well. But still.
So it's a very sad, very sad time for college football, college sports diehards.
I find it just kind of like the conglomeration of all of these conferences. I'm sure it's going to make money in the long run, but I don't know how good it's going to be overall. I we'll see. We'll see how the level of competition is and all that type of stuff. I don't know if it'll affect certain, like, yeah, I'd love it if, yeah, maybe more teams will, adding to the SEC, will actually break up the shit with Alabama and all of that type of stuff. But even then,
Well,
it's.
the one thing that a lot of people are thinking is going to end up happening is, and some people actually just want it to happen, so we don't have to deal with this shit anymore. But a lot of people are thinking that the Big Ten and the SEC might essentially break off and do their own power too. Where they claim a national champion, their respective conferences meet in a quote unquote national championship game. Or so it'd be almost like the equivalent of the AFL NFL before
Yeah,
they merge.
or the American League and National League when they finally
Right.
decided on a World Series.
Right. That would be essentially the functional equivalent.
I don't hate it, but you really lose out on that main money that comes from like a national football game. At the end of the day, that's what they're there for.
Right, and that's the sad thing because people love that kind of, I mean, look at March Madness. Everyone loves the Cinderella. And college football has the ability to be that, but they just choose not to. I mean, as it stands,
Old Sam, whatever, out in Alabama with his car dealership, ain't gonna let that happen. Let his Roll Tide lose money and championships and all that.
right. I mean, as it stands, I mean, the Power Five conferences already have a huge step up over the group of five. I mean, a non-power conference hasn't won a consensus national championship since BYU in 1984, I think. We're talking Ty Detmer. That's how old we're going here. So, as it stands, I mean, the group of five schools really don't stand a sh really stand much of a chance of getting into the college football playoff. I mean, Cincinnati just broke through this past season, but that took Houston having a really good year, UCF have two really good years. All of it kind of built up and added up to eventually Cincinnati breaking through. But I mean, Oregon got through to the national championship and they got obliterated. That's the game where Jameis Winston like tripped and fell, and then the referee fell. That was the semifinal that year. I'm sure you remember that, Francisco.
All right.
But anyway, so yeah, it's the reality of college sports now that, money trumps everything. And
I could feel like Andrew's like optimism just fading away hearing that statement. That breaks my heart because I think out of the three of us, Andrew's actually pretty like, there is hope. There is hope. He's our Dickensian, sports podcaster, our sports goof versus me and Francisco.
Yeah,
I
this
mean,
is.
at the end of the day, I mean, if you're, I'm looking, all of this is stuff looking at the forest, at the 10,000 foot level. If you're down at the tree by tree level, nothing really changes for you if you're not in one of if you're not one of those two conferences, because I mean, UCF, we jumped up to the Big 12 and we may be joined shortly by 4 to 6 other schools.
Mm-hmm. Which was going to be my question to you, if you feel that this is also a response, not just the SEC getting Oklahoma and what was the other one? I already forgot because I'm
paying attention.
Texas, that's not a real football college anyway. But, you know, response to where you guys joined up at the Big 12, but there was 4 teams that got it, including you and Cincinnati. So do you think that's also a panic response for the Big 10 and be like, hey, we need somebody for the commission and everything?
Well, the only reason they added us was because they lost OU in Texas.
Correct. But still, you know, if they never – there could have been other selections, but I think there's – it's a good sign of, say, what your viability is as a school for consideration if they probably looked on the horizon and say, all right, who else would take these schools? Who else would take UCF? Who else would take Cincinnati?
That's a good point.
Because, I mean, you like to tout so much of the national championship and then also keep in consideration you have done well for the several years. So why would I want not take or be in consideration of your team as opposed to, God, I can't tell who's been asked for so long. And when I say asked, it's more like name and reputation, but hasn't gone up.
Nebraska.
I was going to say UCLA, but you guys say they're good apparently these days. I mean, hell, even if you go on the basketball component, UCF has had success in the NCAA tournament. Didn't they go with Taco Falls at some point? They didn't go far.
In 2019.
Yeah, and that's recent enough because what are you trying to get? Recruits. What are you trying to get? NILs. What are you trying to get? More boosters. Consistency is key. And, you know, who you hire. So that's just some food for thought. As a shout-out to UCF, we give you a shout-out.
Thank you. You know, the only problem with that, though, is the SEC probably wouldn't have us because they already have Florida, and Florida hates our guts, and they want no good things to happen to us. And then the ACC, they're probably blocked because they have FSU in Miami. They don't want to, you know, bunch up
Florida,
three teams in the state.
Yeah.
And then the Big Ten, you know, academically speaking, UCF is not up to their standards. So really, the only logical one, strangely, was the Big 12. Mm. And that's not saying that those other conferences wouldn't take UCF. It's just the circumstances are that UCF is not in a good enough position to be picked by those as kind of a first choice. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like I said, at the end of the day, you know, UCF is in a much better conference, is going to be making more money. You know, the group of fives are still going to be getting the short end of the stick. So at the end of the day, I mean, at the local level, not really much changes. It just consolidates more power, which is very unfortunate.
Okay. That's basically about it for now, right? For now.
Unless you guys have additional questions.
I would put an input of things I know because I have to be hamburger helper or restaurant and I help kind of thing. ACC is getting rid of what interconference divisions or whatever the hell they call it. I was part of the news.
Yes. A lot of conferences are getting rid of the divisional format.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to. And what the divisional format was really good for is it just makes it easier to determine, you know, who's going to play whom and who goes to the conference championship. But now there's not really a benefit to do it, especially since the NCAA removed the divisional aspect of things.
Mm.
So, you know, at this point, it's just going to be teams will have a permanent set of permanent rivals, quote unquote, that they'll play every season. And then the remaining in-conference games are going to rotate throughout the remaining teams.
And you won't see every, especially if these things are going to get big, right? You're not going to see every team. So They'll have to kind of pick up like a...
Which is a disadvantage if you're Miami and you just want to be like, hey, we beat Clemson once. Please consider us as legitimate instead of making this Mario Cristobal hire useless. Because that's the thing. They're going to get preferential... Well, I don't want to say there's preferential treatment, but let's say if you're taking out the interconferences in there and you don't play the bigger names per your conference, then you get the easy stage. So that leaves you out of selection, I feel, as a possibility.
Yeah, and it also breaks up the whole, you know, concept of, oh, the Atlantic is the stronger division versus the Coastal Division or the SEC West. The SEC is thinking about doing it. They haven't confirmed it yet. You know, the SEC West is the best division because they have Auburn, Alabama, LSU, whereas the East is kind of the weaker of the two divisions. So you lose that. And then ultimately the championship participants is decided by who has the most wins interconference. So it's more equal, I guess.
Easy win for everybody who plays Tennessee in the SEC.
Right. Tennessee, Vanderbilt is another big one. Yeah, a couple of the SEC schools are just punching bags at this point.
They're just in it just to...
But now everybody gets to use them as punching bags.
Yeah. Oh. All right, guys. So we're at 47 minutes. It is 8:51 Eastern on our time. So let's just try and get a word from our non-sponsors here. All right? So people, places, things, concepts, what have you, that we have been enjoying over the last week. I've started the last few times. Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
All right.
So my non-sponsor, I'll make it quick. It's a food sponsor. It is Ajinomoto. Is a food company that...
How do you spell that?
A-J-I-N-O-M-O-T-O.
Wow, I butchered that in my head. I thought Ajinomoto, like G-E-N, was right.
Japanese, so there we go. Ajinomoto.
They specialize in Asian food, Chinese, Japanese, what have you. A lot of my favorite kind of frozen packaged Asian food comes from them. They make ramen, they make pot stickers, they make dumplings, they make fried rice. So I'm saying for the company in general, what made me think of it is because for dinner, I'm having their Ling Ling pot stickers, which are quite good, by the way. You know, it's not going to be as good as something you'd get from a restaurant, because few frozen foods really are restaurant quality, but it's pretty good. It, I would recommend it. You usually can just get the, I get them from Sam's or Costco. I assume that they sell it at other locations at regular stores. But that's where I usually get it. You know, if you're in the craving for some quick and easy, pretty good Asian food, you can't go wrong with Ajinomoto. Promo code, hard to spell.
Okay. I guess I'll go next. I kind of have two, but it's because it's they're both YouTubers, so I'm gonna shout out two YouTube channels. One of them is, there we go. Let me get on YouTube. One is his name is Joel Haver.
Oh, I love Joel.
Yes, so Joel Haver. I've kind of been binging his stuff lately. He does some pretty funny things. And he's a very humble YouTuber because it took him a long time just to get to this point of success. He's got 1.59 million subscribers right now. He's based out of like New England, so he's somewhere in like, you know, New Hampshire or Vermont, one of those states up there. And he just does a lot of short videos. So they're not long. They don't overstay their welcome. They're just all these little shorts that he writes up and does with his friends and other people he knows. And it's just weird comedy, all right? Like Tim and Eric, right? If you like Tim and Eric, you'll like him. I like Tim and Eric, so thus I like him. He does various different videos. The latest one where he's like science documentary narrator, bumps into an acquaintance from high school. They're just really out of this, like out of left field concepts that he writes up, but it's funny. It's super funny. He also has this line of animations that he does in like this pretty strange style that looks pretty good. They did a
it's so cool.
Yeah, they look really cool. They usually do things on pop culture. He's done stuff about like hearing an enemy music in an RPG game, or playing an RPG for the second time, or returning to an RPG after a long time not playing it. He recently did a Batman one, which was kind of weird but funny, and he does every, I think he's done it the last 3 years. He's during the Oscars, rather than instead of watching the actual Oscars, because the Oscars are terrible and nobody watches them, and unless you know, Will Smith slaps somebody, he actually takes about like 3 hours to try and create a movie from scratch, like just off the top of his head, like just do a movie, just film it with whatever you got around you, trying to write up a script, try and get whoever you can into it, and just do a movie. And so he's done a few of those. He's done semi feature length projects here. I haven't seen, I think I've seen like one of them, but they're just strange. Like, it's all Tim and Eric stuff. And some of these are just like off the top of his head. So, yeah, this guy's good. He's good. So he kind of just kept plugging away at it. And then finally the YouTube algorithm worked in his favor. So, Joel Haver. So that's one. And then the other one, is called, I'm trying to get the right name for this. Okay, his name is Man Carrying Thing.
Okay.
So he's in the same style as Joel Haver. Not as high quality, because he doesn't have all the stuff, and I don't think he comes from a film background like I think Joel does. But he's also he does all these little shorts. They're much shorter. They're very quick things. Sony, now that Morbius flopped again, which was pretty funny. PG-13 movies after using up their one F word.
Why is Landman Dragon on my screen? That's Wheel of Time. Don't get me started on that show. Show's
trash. Yeah, he talks about different shows and movies, and he actually reviews books too. So... I know Charles is an avid reader, so he does review books too. He does like these parody videos, and every once in a while he'll do like an actual sincere one. He does video essays as well for books and everything like that. And his wife also has a accompanying channel, Woman Carrying Man. So, but it's good. He's good. He's just a guy that, he got a degree right now. He's in his late 20s and stuff like that now. And he, you know, they're good videos. They're good short videos, and I like them too. So, yeah. So, promo code for both of these guys, Tim and Eric. That's who they remind me of. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. That's surreal, kind of weird, out of left field comedy. Okay, that's it for me.
So it was 4th of July weekend, and they usually like to marathon the crap out of everything, you know, come 4th of July. So either you get the Born on the 4th of July by Oliver Stone, you either get The Patriot with Mel Gibson, you might get a couple other movies, you might get a couple of Captain Americas. But that's not my form of entertainment. That's not how I show my patriotism. Yes, it is still there, even though I'm heavily critiquing, because that's what you're supposed to do in today's days and time, you know, or any time, really. You're allowed to criticize things and go from there. And you're also allowed to enjoy your form of medium for how you should view your independence. And for me, I think I had to go to my sister's for her barbecue later that day, so I was already in kind of like a gripey mood. And every now and then, guys, I can be kind of an intense personality. You both know this personally and professionally. And sometimes, aside from being an intense personality, I can kind of be a dick and be more cynical. I'm borderline being a nihilist. But there is one movie that shows me, and since it's Wheel of Time, I'm going to use a Wheel of Time reference, that gives me a memory of light that can awaken the positivity in my soul. It's the movie equivalent of Journey's Don't Stop Believin'. Hold on to that feeling, Streetlights people, whoa. It also is probably what I will watch every 4th of July, and then just have one of the movies as a marathon, but even though I feel you only need to see one, but I don't know if it was AMC, I think it was AMC. AMC was playing Rocky, and I love every bit of that movie. It is in my top 10, probably my number 6, and it is properly patriotic because you have Apollo Creed just dressing up in all that red, white, and blue. But if you have not seen Rocky, young kids, because you all people like me, there's no excuse at this point. Basically, the underdog, Rocky Balboa, the Italian Stallion, gets picked to go against Apollo Creed, the champion. 15 rounds boxing. Sylvester Stallone wrote and directed. I cry two scenes. Every time I see the two scenes, boys, I shed not just tears, but just rivers. The one where he goes and sees Mick in the apartment, or Mick goes sees him in the apartment. He's like, well, you know what, maybe Mick, you know, like my house, my stinks. It stinks, Mick. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. And then Rocky, and then Mick's like, ah, you know, I'm 76 years old, Rock. And he just leaves, and then Rocky comes out and like talks to him. And I'm like, Rocky, for once, because he always had that upbeat attitude, and he just took it, man. He just took, he let out, and then he went back to his good ways. And then I do cry at the Adrian at the end of the scene where he's like, I don't care about being Apollo. I don't care about being champion. I just want to go to this and say, nobody ever gone to this before. I'm like, I feel that. I felt that in my soul. Because maybe America sometimes goes a distance. Sometimes we go on a road that we should not follow. Case in point, SCOTUS. But damn it, man. It was the perfect kind of patriotism for your individual self to be the underdog, to find something worth fighting for and have faith in yourself. And is that not the true spirit of everything that happened in 1776 was supposed to be? I don't know. But you can have your Independence Day, Will Smith, now more notorious for slapping Chris Rock in the face. You can have your Patriot Mel Gibson, who's more known for Passion of the Christ and kind of hating a certain religious sector, even though he won't say it. Me, I'll take my Rocky Balboa. I'll take my Italian Stallion. I take the I will cry every time I see those two scenes separately. Apollo Creed coming out in attire that would make me blush as a showman. And I always take my story of the underdog, going the distance and having a chance, and finding something more in life than just a mere championship. Rocky, my non-sponsor, go watch it. I was sitting on this the entire weekend, so it's a very impassioned speech. Promo code, yo, Adrian.
Francisco, have you seen it?
I have actually seen this one, so yes.
I would quit the show. I would literally quit the show. I would quit the show. It is that serious.
Yeah.
I was considering saying that I hadn't just to screw with you, but I have seen it.
I would cry. Mm. I would literally cry. Because I don't want to say it's like required viewing, but it really is. And I guess I'm going to take a dig at everything. When all these other shows and movies are so unexceptional and generic and formulaic and unnecessary, Avatar 2 through 5, and kind of unoriginal or just for cheap laughs, you got something that really hit the heart. And sometimes you know what the problem is? What can follow something that came out all the way back then, almost 40 years ago, right? We're dating ourselves here. What can follow that and be original and heart-wrenching and also inspiring? You know, Don't Stop Believing. Mm. Hold on to that feeling. Streetlight people. Whoa.
Okay. All right. So we are at 1 hour here. But before we do anything, guys, we need to select a champion of handsomeness.
I still have a tear in my eye thinking about Rocky. Okay. So, I'm back in.
Here we go. So here we go. So the final four of the handsomest coaches slash managers in North American professional sports for 2022. I do have something planned for next season when we come back somewhere around September or something like that. Like we'll end in July, and then we'll come back in September. I feel like it will be a lot different for sure, and maybe we'll get some laughs out of it, but I'm not gonna tell you guys just yet. Anyways, all right, so let's start with our well, the last one was our NHL rep, and that.
So we need to put an asterisk on that because Andrew and I were waiting on you to reply to me. Why did I pick Luke Richardson last time? Because I know we made mention of him, and I said he looked like the Josh Brolin.
Wait. Wait, so who did you pick?
I had picked last time Rob Lowe Hockey Man.
Yeah, the Golden Knights head coach. Yeah,
Correct.
Bruce Cassidy.
But I should just know what Dave Cassidy meant, seriously. But Andrew had pointed out Luke Richardson, and he had been hired. And I was like, I thought we talked about him though, because I remember calling him, hockey Josh Brolin.
Yeah, I mean, he
So
was
did we talk about Luke Richardson? And if we did,
I
then
think
we will keep to
yeah,
Cassidy.
we did. Yeah, we did talk about him.
But is it that I forgot him, or it
I
wasn't
don't
announced?
know.
Oh, I know why. I
No,
think
we
it's
went
because
th
I saw the player photo.
You didn't see him as a coach.
No, I mean that's some suave shit. That's some
Are
but
you
Joey and
making a
Pacey,
change?
no, I can't do it. The heart sometimes remembers, but if I went all in with Bruce Cassidy, it's only when Bruce and I break up, then I'll see what Luke and I have.
Okay. All right, so Bruce Cassidy, he's the first one there. The NHL ref, the Vegas Golden Knights head coach. Okay, so that's one. Then our NBA rep is Jason Kidd.
Oh, handsome man.
So Jason Kidd right now as an actual coach, not as a player. But I mean, he hasn't changed that much. He just
The beard helped out.
grew out the beard. It's got the salt and pepper now.
You gotta remember, he used to be that mustache goatee
Well, he
thing
had
it
the
looked
goatee
like.
going. There you go. Right? So that was him before, but this is him now. So there you go. There's your Jason Kidd. And the NFL.
Oof.
So yeah, Sean McVay of the Los Angeles Rams. There you go. He's a tough competition. And Major League Baseball, Gabe Kapler.
Oh.
Are you going to bracket this, or are we doing this as straight up four way?
Here, Charles. You can't go with Babe Kapler here.
I can go
He can
with
go. Yeah,
any of
he's
them.
he's he's the MLB ref, so it's a final four.
Do
Who
you
does
want
he
me to
choose?
rank? Do you want me to rank this?
Yeah, let's go.
All
Who's
right.
number
So,
four?
Bruce Cassidy.
Bruce Cassidy at number four. All
Number
right.
three, Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd.
Because I know what he did to his woman back then. So, I gotta stand for something. You ain't gonna treat me like that, Jason. Pop in your face. 2-1 is very hard. 2-1 is very hard. Sean McVay's buff, man. He's a champion. He's a champion. He was able to glow up Matt Stafford. Literally, I've never seen it. We've seen veteran quarterbacks get traded and they don't instantly win in 1 year. Everybody wants to play for him. Probably knows a lot of people. He did Todd Gurley wrong. I'll say that. He did Todd Gurley wrong. But it happens. It happens a little bit. It's a little bit of a dirty business. Be grateful. Did he do Jared Goff wrong? I don't know. Jared Goff will have an opportunity. He'll suffer another 2 years. He helped rebuild a franchise because prior to that man coming in, it was the Jeff Fisher show. As someone who was a Tennessee Titan fan, I can tell you, not all that glitters is gold. And unfortunately, Jeff Fisher sold himself to be King of Midas. Ooh, that's a burn. Ooh, I like that. Let me save that when I insult somebody outside. But when we talk about Gabe Kapler, has he done anything substantial with his team? Not so ever.
they won the National League West.
Yeah,
last season, 107 victories. They had the most in MLB, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that means nothing, though, right? Because they could, you know, they couldn't even beat the Dodgers and all that other stuff. But we know he's handsome. We know he has a good fitness routine. His eyes are literally like a pool of happiness. He's part of the tribe.
Have you seen him in the glasses, though?
Look, you know, I don't know if you ever watched Community, but do you know when Dean Pelton sees Jeff the first time with the aviary shades and he just falls on the ground? And it's like, even his shadow! I would just melt a little bit. Oh, man. And I wear aviator shades, too, so I'm intense like that. Don't play me. Don't play me like that. That's an intense man. Could be like a side Bond villain that you just fight right there going on. But Gabe Kapler is also he's the Helena Troy of this whole contest. The face that launched 1,000 ships. Read a book, kids, seriously. Like, if they don't understand that. Because we would never have had this conversation if this pinnacle of persona was not here. The personification of perfection was not here. And it's tough because we always knew that Sean McVay was a babe. We know he's beautiful. We know he's gorgeous. He didn't, and since we're on the Top Gun field, hint, hint, that maybe a Halloween costume, I don't know, he didn't take my breath away. Because I knew Gabe Kapler was the manager for the Phillies, but I don't really care for the Phillies. And then I just see this on ESPN, I'm like, what the fuck? Sup, son? I ain't even swing that way, but you're going to make me happy. So because it's the Helena Troy, it's gotta be Sean's number two and Gabe's number one. And plus the nickname, Babe Kepler. What am I gonna do? Sean McBay does work out pretty well, though. Holy shit, that's a good one. But you know what? This is 2022, man. If everybody can be a polyamorous relationship, I can be too when it comes to this nonsense. You know, it's Sean McBay. What can you do with Jason Kidd's nickname? Basin Kid? Mm-hmm. And then Bruce Cassidy? Bruce Bassidy? Cassidy. Oh, no, that makes me think Cassidy.
That's probably the only thing you can do. He's my Bruce Cassidy. I'm his Sundance
look,
Kid.
Look, he's there by default. And sometimes being invited to dance is better than not dancing at all, right? We go to with Sean McVay. With all respect, he is a winner. But we go Gabe Kepler as the Babe Kepler, as the Helena Troy. Now, if we make this into an annual thing, and it could be because firings come and go. We could just make it a speedier thing and not having to revisit each one, but no one changed the conference.
I think it's doing this yearly may not work because, like, there might be not much movement, but we could always just be like, okay, these are the new guys who just got hired this year, and just do like a whole thing just for those guys, you know?
Round robins.
Yeah, and they see if they can unseat the king.
Oh, man. Unless, and the only other asterisk I'll put, if we have any change of hairstyle or body change. Like, if Andy Reid comes out looking 250 pounds of pure muscle, looking more like Mario than a Wario. Actually, Wario's more buff, so looking more like Wario than Mario. Those are all things under contention. Because sometimes, like, you know, listen, man, I'm just saying, if Mike Vrabel comes off in a cutoff, you know, game might be over. That dude's got some guns, man. He ain't going to play. Change that hair out. Like, Tony La Russa, there's nothing you can do, buddy. You're on, like, the fugly side. And Nick Nurse, we love you, but you're still goofy, bro. You're so goofy to me. I don't know what to say.
All right.
So we're going to crown it. The Helena Troy is, Gabe Kepler. And
Kepler.
I'm going to call him. Look, I'm his daddy. I'm going to call him whatever I want, all right? And then Sean McVay, you're just, oh man, it's okay, Pat. It's okay, bud. You know, you'll maybe next year.
And just for good measure, I have Nick Nurse up here.
Nick Nurse is goofy. He's adorable, but he's goofy, man.
Yeah.
Nick Nurse is what, like, Nick Nurse is what Mad TV parodies people.
I don't know if you've heard of the comedian Mike Birbiglia, but he reminds me of him.
No. You see, Nick Nurse reminds me of, like, what a substitute teacher would look like on Mad TV that wasn't the AA Ron by Keegan Michael Key or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. We're at an hour and 10. So this is fun. This is a fun competition that just kind of Man, spurred out of nothing, but that it was really fun going through like a whole month of this. A whole month of this we did
He's
our
beauty and
yeah.
he's grace. He's got a handsome face. That's the intro.
Yeah. So, I do have something planned for next season. So, we're going to get ready for that and I'm sure you guys are going to get a huge laugh out of that. And yeah, well, that's it for that. We're running short on time here in this shorter version of our show. And let's head on over to the cage, Charles. Now, if you can, kind of calm down there a bit. Are you ready?
Well, yeah, we're gonna go from something that titillated my juices that titillate the juices every week that we're in. Welcome, everybody, your weekly Trueplex of Cage with Charles. Full disclosure, full reminder, wrestling is not fake. It is scripted. It's a stage fight. It is a song and dance about men and women beating the holy hell out of each other, trying to accomplish some big things in life, establish their legacies, cement their legacies, win some championships, beat the holy hell out of each other, as we mentioned, make them bleed a little bit, and more or less provide me what I need for entertainment in life, because Lord knows when you're an attorney and you host a podcast show and all you want to do for almost 5 weeks is just talk about wrestling, and then crazy-ish happens and it prevents you from doing what it's the only thing I'm notable for. It changes you a little bit. I went from being just a geeky guy who likes wrestling to like deep throat in that sense of like, here's the information that I have. I'm the insider on all these things, not wrestling because I have the news. I hated it. I just want to complain. It's, oh, there's a title change. Look at, that's right, because it's Dynamite Wednesday. Threw my head off. Well, that's a spoiler to
Oh,
me.
yeah, that's
Maybe
right.
I wanted to watch this. Things happen in wrestling. That's how we'll start this off. A lot of things happen in wrestling, but wrestling wise, AEW Dynamite's occurring right now. Watch it on TBS. Always confuses me because they have the TNT title, but now they're no longer on TNT. They're on TBS, but yet Rampage is on TBS. We already talked about Forbidden Door, so they're just kind of getting back in the street of things. You're gonna have Jon Moxley versus Brody King in a street fight. No, it's not gonna be a street fight. It's gonna be just defending the interim AEW title. Hate that logic. Why can't it just be the whole title and CM Punk comes back and challenges it? Simple storyline, but what do I know? It was a TNT title street fight between Scorpio Sky and Wardlow. Wardlow, the guy who beat up MJF and has been powerbombing people all throughout. Yes, that Wardlow. Did you just get spoiled that he won the TNT title in that Street Fighter Charles? Yes, I did. Is that good for him? It's fine. My concern sometimes is when your momentum is too hot to handle, and then giving them a mid-card title. What does that mean? Is it catastrophic to their push? Is it saying, hey, we're going to see how you do with the mid-card title, and then they push you to the main event? Is it saying, hey, we don't necessarily have a main event? What's so bad about the TNT title? Well, it's kind of sucked for the last couple of months with the hot potato in between Cody Rhodes, who's now over in WWE, Sammy Guevara, Scorpio Sky, Sammy Guevara again. Cody was probably hiding in a mask. Back to Scorpio Sky. I got confused. Then they created the multi-pass championship, the all. Was it all Atlantic Championship? And that confused me. Pac won that. I want to see how that goes out. And now we just gave it to Wardlow. I don't think every champion needs to have a 8 month run with it. This is Scorpio Sky's, I believe, second defense or second reign with it, and didn't go too long. I believe he was injured or still is injured, so that might explain a street fight because you just beat each other up and going from there. But I need legitimacy when you're doing title hopping because what happened between Sammy and Scorpio really didn't put that credibility on the TNT title. It felt more like Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair a couple of years back for the Raw Women's title, where they like exchanged three title reigns between each other in the span of like a month and a half. Bad move, can't do it. What this does give me, the juices are titillated. That's. I'll explain where that comes from in a second. No, I didn't create it on my own. I'm surprised. You're going to have possibly Wardlow versus Miro. Miro, that Miro? Yeah, that Miro. The Bulgarian guy used to be Rusev? Yeah, that guy. The one who was probably the second best, or if not the best TNT champion, not counting the late, Brody Lee? Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Because Miro at least has some good matches. He called himself God's favorite champion. Basically saying that he was going to fight God since he lost his title, and then he got hurt and went on the shelf, and now he's back. So what do I love in my wrestling, boys? Aside from excellent technical wrestling, I like meat slapping meat. Warlow's a big meaty boy. Hero is a big Bulgarian meaty boy. I'm gonna get some of that slapping. Sign me up, please. Other stuff's going on in AEW that we'll talk about next week to keep the show brief, but also because I don't want to go too much into it. I still hate the AEW interim title. I don't understand it, guys. It just makes no sense to me. That's like saying, hey, we don't have a call. That's like saying we vacate the end. I could do this. I could do this. I could bring back to Andrew. Hey, we vacated USC's wins, because of the Reggie Bush incident. So the second place person is going to be the interim champion until we determine anything about reinstating. I don't understand. Can they even petition for reinstatement? I feel like they should. But that's just me going back to times, kids, because we're going into a field. I don't know. So let's bring into our field. New Japan things. It's happening. Jay White, he's going to be feuding against some people. I still don't know how I feel about Tetsuya Naito not being part of the Forbidden Door. He was kind of disappointed with it. Hiroshi Tanahashi, want to see him back in. They're kind of a slow moment right now. Kushida, who used to wrestle WWE but was originally in New Japan, is back. They could be doing some cool things. We'll talk about that more maybe on a semi thing. I feel like with my little semi goof stuff, I should highlight certain guys. Impact, watch Impact. It's still good. Ring of Honor, they're going to have Death Before Dishonor in a couple of months, their other pay-per-view. Yay them.
Your boy.
WWE. WWE. Oh, they seem to have New Japan in. I'm going real quick. Oh, G1 Climax. But I already told you guys what I think. Put it on Kenta, strap a rocket to him, let him go against Jay White. Destroy the Bullet Club, keep some of them there, and then let everybody else kind of go single so they're not wrestling the same people over and over again. That's the issue with New Japan. There, I gave it in a like two sentence abbreviation. WWE had a pay-per-view this weekend. WWE also had on NXT yesterday the Great American Bash. One big title change. You now have Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade are the new NXT Women Tag Team Champions. They took that from Toxic Attraction's Gigi Dolin and JC Jayne. Good, I guess. Cora Jade's also not Cora Jade, but Roxanne Perez is also going to cash in her contract against Mandy Rose, later Toxic Attraction, who's the women's champion. I don't imagine she's going to win that. That's going to be next week, but I think that means that pretty soon there's going to be a call-up that brings Toxic Attraction onto the main roster, so it brings Mandy Rose back, which I'm for. I like the idea of women factions being in wrestling, especially since it's kind of lacking a lot of places. It's over in AEW with the baddie section. Follow my boy Stokely Halfway on his Twitter, Big Stoke. Follow us on the Twitter at JOJR, Charles the True, Dan Frijoles. But he is heading out with Jade Cargill because there's two Jades, so I had to make sure not to confuse myself, boys. It's confusing sometimes. Jade Cargill, Red Velvet's on there, Kira Hogan's on there. So I like the idea on WWE's main roster. You do have some factions going from there, and that can benefit it along the way. Last night also they had Bronson, he's not Bronson Steiner, he's Bron Breakker going against Cameron Grimes to defend his title, Bron retained. Melo Hayes or Carmelo Hayes going against Grayson Waller, he retained. Go watch that. You can see on USA, you can see on Sling, watch on Peacock. Go from there. That was the only big title change, so I won't go too crazy with it. Money in the Bank was this weekend. I watched it. I didn't watch it the same night. I just kind of split the baby. So Money in the Bank is like that controversial, hey. It's like, a fifth big pay-per-view of the year because you have Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, you have Survivor Series, and you have WrestleMania. WrestleMania being the biggest. But Money in the Bank kind of has that excitement. Remember what it's about. Oh, hey, whoever wins the contract from the ladder, the little briefcase, can cash in their title anytime, any way, any form, any
So, all right,
pay-per-view, any
I
show.
just want to understand. So they grab the thing at the top of the ladder, right? And they
Yes.
can utilize that too.
Cash in a contract on the main championship at any point. So let's say if
So it's
there was two
basically like
rests.
they get an opportunity to challenge for it.
Yeah,
Okay.
but it can happen literally right there. So, and that leads to points. So I'll give you an example.
Oh.
Go ahead, friend. Go ahead,
Andrew's
Andrew.
got one.
One of my favorites was the one where Dolph Ziggler cashed in.
Correct. And it was after a match of Alberto Del Rio had with, I forgot who he went against, but there was a title match. Del Rio retained it on Raw, and then Dolph just comes out, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's happening!" And Dolph's like, "It's gonna happen!" And everyone's like, "Is it gonna happen?" And then it happens. It's almost a guaranteed
It's like a
point.
wild card, basically.
Pretty much, it's Charlie Day just going crazy. There's only there has been times where the cash-ins don't work for the men, but the women's right now is a perfect 100 going from there, 100%. So it does add in some excitement. It's very fun prediction for me. Because I like these little things to predict on. And I was kind of right throughout the night. So in the women's ladder match, Liv Morgan won. And I said that's who it was going to win. So that's cool. Bobby Lashley versus Theory for the United States Championship. Lashley wins by submission. Bobby Lashley is just a gift, but I feel a little underwhelmed that he's not challenging Roman for one the championships at SummerSlam, because at SummerSlam, Roman's going to be going against Brock Lesnar in a last man standing match for the Undisputed Universal Championship. What did I do wrong in life to not get a triple patty meet of Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, and Bobby Lashley in my main event at SummerSlam? Doesn't that sound more compelling than Bobby Lashley, as fantastic as he is, as deserving as he is to hold the United States Championship?
Man.
Doesn't he deserve to be in my main event? That is lean USDA meat of three men going against each
That's
other.
a triple baconator.
Yeah, and shit, you can even add Drew McIntyre in as the Grey Poupon. He's Scottish, but I don't know, like Scottish meat coming in there. So because it's not a full quad patty, but Drew's got a good body too. Character is boring for me because you guys know how I feel about Drew. I liked him as a heel. What can I say? Bianca Belair versus Carmella. That was a fine match. I actually didn't hate it as much because I feel like, I'll say it right now, Carmella is a little underrated. Bianca Belair though, Vince is strapping the rocket on her and it's working. I don't think her first reign as a champion was that great, but man, I think her and Becky had match of the year for WWE. Back in WrestleMania, I think what they've been doing with her character is very good. They're doing well. Match of the night, though, was the Usos versus Street Profits. Good old tag team wrestling. And they gave it a lot of time. They gave it 23 minutes going from there. It ended kind of schmoozy because there was a three count, even though Montez shoulder was up. So it wasn't like, because remember, wrestling to be pinned, you have to have both shoulders on the mat. But I would imagine that leads to a match at SummerSlam or on Raw just to get some ratings in there. But it was damn good quality. It's in the top five for WWE matches of the year. The hard part was when I make these lists, I don't get available all the AEW or New Japan stuff because I either have to buy things or I have to go on YouTube or pirate things. I'm lazy, but you'll hear it. And then Ronda Rousey versus Natalya happened. And that was a match I wasn't really in for it. Ronda retained. And then Liv Morgan came in and cashed in her title shot and pinned Ronda. I thought she was going to lose the cash in. I remember when I talked about last week, Liv was the perfect person to win the briefcase and possibly cash in because she was the person who always had the title matches but could never win the big one. But she cashed in on Ronda, who was hobbling on a knee injury, alleged knee injury or forked knee injury, and then got a pinfall, one, two, three, in like a minute match. So Liv Morgan's now your new SmackDown Women's Championship. Yay, good for you. I like it. I think it's the right move because I think that women's division needs an injection of personality. Fans weren't really crazy for Charlotte Flair being the champion, and then Ronda's very hit or miss. I like Ronda if they don't have her be a W. They need to make her more like Brock before he became Cowboy Brock, where she just kind of wants to kick ass and be the best. It's a very simple wrestler. And then when you try to put people who don't have that personality yet developed, or maybe it's just something they could do in an entertainment spotlight, because what do I always tell you guys? WWE is more of entertainment, merch, movie, and soap operas to a degree. You don't get that much
They
in
took
AEW, though
my
it's there.
germ.
Yeah, they took my job. Exactly. So, Ronda, if you just have her be a badass, it's a very simple mindset. I kicked a lot of ass in the UFC. I'm going to kick a lot of ass in WWE. That's really what it should have been like. That's what I would book. But Vince and I are two different people. That's why he's a billionaire. And that's why I'm not a billionaire. But yet, also, I don't have to pay hush money NDA. So, I'll take that win for me. Ooh, had to put to Vince. He makes my life miserable sometimes, guys. I'm sorry. And then you had the men's ladder match. So here's the thing I want to say on. I actually think I liked it out of the ladder matches I've seen the last couple of years. It was very good. Everybody did their part. Sami Zayn did not win, unfortunately, even though I told Vince this is what you need to do because Austin Theory, the guy that you see with the briefcase there, oh, Austin Theory, that guy who lost his title earlier to that magnificent man meat that is Bobby Lashley. Yeah, Theory wasn't supposed he or not supposed to. He wasn't in the match, but right now the last storyline since I guess February is that he's been like Mr. McMahon's favorite son. And so management put him in there as a storyline thing, and then Theory ended up winning. And the minute I saw him, I was like, fuck, he's gonna win. I just knew it. I don't hate it per se if the whole storyline is him getting preferential treatment from the establishment leads him to winning a title because he might cash in on Roman. He's gonna have a match with Bobby at SummerSlam to get a rematch for his US belt, but he stated he's also going to cash in on Roman. So it's either Theory's going to fail, hear me out, guys. Theory's either going to fail his cash in, which works because I think actually, if you think about it, it makes Roman a face a little bit, because Theory is the next big thing in Vince McMahon's eyes, but Roman Reigns like, I'm the present, and you need to acknowledge me because I'm your tribal chief, and we acknowledge you, Roman. We acknowledge you. Or, hear me out, because I have a hard time believing a lot of people can beat Roman, and I feel that is going to be set for Drew McIntyre to do at Clash of the Castle, which is a UK pay-per-view that's happening in August or September, so it's all set in pieces, but you can have Theory cash in and get one of the titles, but you can keep that stipulation I told you about where it properly splits the two belts back. Because couldn't you look at him and then look at a returning babyface Cody Rhodes coming back from a pectoral issue and winning a title off of Theory and getting either the US, not the US, but the Universal title or the World Heavyweight Championship? I think that works, because I still want my whole Seth Rollins wins the title. I think he deserves to be rewarded for carrying the organization on his back the last 6 months with his character work and his match work. But I do feel the best way for Cody to have full closure is winning the title off of Seth at some point. So either you can have Seth beat Theory, but it doesn't work when everybody's kind of like a heel versus a heel. But, you know, you can have also Theory having that preferential share, because you're building up a guy that you're not supposed to like. You're not supposed to have go home heat, but you're supposed to be like, I want this guy to lose heat. So imagine he's been offered every opportunity that other people couldn't get. He hasn't worked a day in his life, basically, to get that championship. And then somebody's like, I'm sick of this. I'm going to challenge this guy. I'm going to beat him. And then that person loses. And then that next person loses. But it's a baton of inspiration and motivation, so someone can finally dethrone this man, this establishment, and go to the distance to take that championship, kind of like Rocky. I can live with that storyline, but that's long-term booking. But Vince thinks longer than I do, but I daydream a lot. And that's all I got for you this week on The Cage.
Oh, all right. Well, that's it. It was a short one, but we got what we wanted to say out of the way. We finally crowned the handsomest head coach in slash manager in North American pro sports. So I'm happy about that, and made some sense of the college football stuff. All right, guys. Well, next week we might actually talk about some baseball.
Oh, we did technically. We crowned a baseball manager as the most handsome current, manager slash coach. So yeah, take that as it is.
That's right. So we'll leave it at that. Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Take care.